Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
We're going to talk about the Fredericksburg Area Museum this morning, and we have a number of guests to do that. Town Talk, financed by Deakin Wealth Management, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Teresa Kramer is here from the Fredericksburg Area Museum. Teresa, it's good to have you in here. This is your first time in here, I think.
It is my first time here.
Well, welcome. We'll try to make it. This isn't like going to the dentist or anything. It will not be painful. So it's good to have you here. We welcome back Mary Catherine Greenlaw. Mary Greenlaw, we were just saying, it's been a long time since you've been in here. So
it has been a while.
So
we need to catch up on things.
We do need to catch up on things, and we can't let all this go this time go by. But welcome to you, and also for the first time, Michael Carter is here this morning. Someone that I met a couple months ago, and was hoping we would get you in sometime, and you're here, Michael. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Good morning.
Before we're going to talk about a number of things, and especially a big program going on at the museum. But before we get into the museum, while I've got you here, Mayor Greenlaw, these are exciting times for the city. Just a number of things going on. The community is engaged in a lot of things, and you take a look. At least when I look to do shows and find topics, it's generally right now the city, because this is where it's happening.
It is where it's happening. If you come downtown on Friday night and go to Sounds of Summer in Market Square, you'll definitely believe that. The museum's hosts, as you know, that music series and various sponsors. And we have anywhere from 500 to 1,000 people downtown on Friday night. Downtown is alive. We had a big turnout last night to look at the project, the William Square project. You know, two whole city blocks being renovated, that's a big deal in a small city.
Yeah.
And everybody's very interested in that. As always, the citizens are engaged like we want them to be. So I'd say there's a lot of good stuff going on.
Well, and the engagement part is what really interests me, because when we started to see it when City Council was dealing with the budget earlier this year with the schools, a lot of people came out for that. Councilman Duffy last night posted some pictures on Facebook of the group that was like you mentioned, that community meeting. People are really engaged and interested in what goes on in Fredericksburg now.
As well they should be.
Yeah.
And we'd like to hear from you. So
this is one of the first times I have seen you without a baseball hat on.
Usually. Well, that's, yeah. I was trying this morning to electronically put my signature on my contract for my season tickets.
Were you successful?
That was my challenge. No, I got to figure that one out. But I am so excited. I have my season tickets, and I've picked out my seat, and people are having the best time doing that.
Oh, they are. And just the number of people that came out a couple of Fridays ago when they opened the team store. Uh-huh. The place was packed. And I mean, I too, after I talked to you and Bill Freeling and the owner, and then I went and bought a couple of t-shirts. And there really is excitement. And even as they add and talk a little bit more about what the stadium will look like, I mean, this is a great thing for the city of Fredericksburg.
It truly is. It truly is. And if you sit in the right spot, you get to post the score. Did you see that?
I saw that. Which that will be really fun. So you know where you're going to sit.
I know exactly where I'm going to sit. Right behind safe third base.
Oh, okay. That seems to be a popular place. I mean, I've seen several people that's where they plan on sitting. So you're going to be in good company.
The home team dugout.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now you usually can't be seen without a Fredericksburg hat on, a baseball hat.
No, that's absolutely right. It went to Greece with me. It went to Cooperstown with me. It's gone all over the place.
I wore one last week to Wrigley Field. I felt like I was breaking through for the baseball team.
Yeah, I'm jealous that you got to Wrigley Field.
it was a great experience. Before we got a break coming up in just a second. But before we get there, Teresa, the mayor mentioned Sounds of Summer.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Every week, because some years it seems that, you know, depending on the band or who's there, the crowds will fluctuate. Haven't really fluctuated much this year. They've just been big.
No, they've been really big, and I'm really glad that the community's coming out to the series and that we're seeing new people every week and also returning people. I see members of the community that I see them at Sounds of Summer every week. So it's great to have people coming and gathering in Market Square every Friday for some music and family activities, kids crafts, maybe have a beer or a glass of wine and listen to some great local music.
I usually get there about 7:30 and just kind of roam around. Mm-hmm. But do people get there really early? Because I wonder if those people that are actually sitting and bring a chair to Market Square, they must get there early to stake out a place.
They do. We do have those people that come right when we start setting up too. Like we might not even have a tent up for the band, and they're already putting out their chairs to stake a spot. So we've been having we have very loyal people coming every week with their chairs to come to the square.
You can follow the Facebook page for the Frederick Spergaria mm-hmm. Museum. Will let you know who's coming each week, but it really doesn't matter. It's just it's really just a great place to just come and mill around and listen to some music every Friday night.
Yeah, and you don't have to be there for the whole entire concert. That's the great thing about Sounds of Summer, is that we have people that sit there all day, all the whole entire concert, but then we have people that might be passing through before they go to dinner or before they go downtown to maybe do some shopping. So it's a great opportunity just to go and get around and be with the community.
Well, Mayor Greenlaw, that's another thing. The Sounds of Summer brings so many people downtown, and even if you don't want to stay the whole time at the concert, you can. Some shops are open, and it gives you a chance to see what's available downtown and do some shopping.
Absolutely.
Or eating.
Absolutely. We love it.
Well, in Fredericksburg, because I yesterday was talking to a couple business owners that have clothing stores downtown, and when we were talking just about the fact that wasn't that many years ago that Fredericksburg was always just associated with we've got a lot of nice antique stores downtown, and that really has changed. There's just a wide variety of things downtown.
Yes, indeed, there is. We have evolved. From where the downtown was the downtown, and then there were malls, and now there's more downtown again. But we definitely have a wide variety of shops, a lot of new shops. I do a ribbon cutting frequently, which is an exciting thing. The best thing a mayor can do is to welcome a new business or an expanding business.
That is true, though. You are doing a lot more ribbon cutting these days than we have seen recently, which shows you that the economy is better and that people are sold on downtown.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And a lot of people downtown for the Fredericksburg Area Museum, Teresa, if people aren't aware of the museum has just it's a wide variety of different, you can see a lot of different things in the museum, and it's worth checking out.
Definitely. It's we change our exhibits every year. So if you haven't been to the museum recently, I would definitely recommend it. We opened 4 new exhibits in March. So it's something that we want to continuously bring something new to the community to see.
And we're going to talk about some of the things you can see in the museum as we go along this morning. Teresa Kramer is here, Michael Carter is here, and Mayor Mary Catherine Greenlaw here this morning. When we come back, we're going to get into a big program that the museum is involved in, the Hannah Sem program, and we will do that when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. You can weigh in about today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, your host, Ted Schubel.
We are talking Fredericksburg Area Museum this morning with Teresa Kramer, Michael Carter, and Mayor Mary Catherine Greenlaw. And one of the really exciting things going on, Teresa, right now is it's an ongoing program, I guess, mm-hmm. what for the next year, the Hannah Sem program that the museum's involved mm-hmm. with.
It's a year-long program series commemorating the year 1619 and the first Africans coming to the Virginia colonies. So it's a big program, and it's not just the city of Fredericksburg that's commemorating this event, but it's the whole entire nation and the state of Virginia as well. So this is a part of a nationwide and statewide conversation.
I first met you, Michael Carter, because mm-hmm. of this. We met in Market Square a couple months ago, and you're kind of the one of the lead people mm-hmm. with this whole program. And I know this is meaningful and exciting to you.
Absolutely. Hina Sem is the Ghanaian or Khan tree word for our story. And one of the things that we wanted to do was share our story from our perspective as the African Americans. 1619, the first enslaved Africans arrived to the shores of what was
Old Point Comfort,
but even mm-hmm. before then, Turtle Island.
Oh, Turtle Island, yeah.
Because this wasn't our land. There was no Point Comfort to come to.
Yeah.
So even in telling those stories, we hear about the Middle Passage, but we never consider what, you know, when you start a book in the middle, do you really get the true story? So I wanted to be able to share and express the beginning of that passage, before we got to any enslavement, to understand why these individuals were selected to build a nation that would be the most dominant nation in the world. Well, you know, they'd already built a nation in Mali, in Songhai, and the individuals who saw the greatest of that, and decided to steal those individuals and bring them here. And a lot of times now, we don't get a chance to hear that side of their story, and the side of the story of all those individuals who triumphed, who's continued to build despite the adversity that only, you know, that most people can't imagine.
I was going to say, how can you? I mean, you can't get your head around it.
I lived in Ghana, West Africa for some time. And, you know, it was tough to imagine the conditions that our people endured. Just to get here, to endure even worse conditions. You can't imagine 200 people in this room, in this studio.
And that's what it was like?
For 3 months. That's before the ship. This is in the slave dungeons. So they trekked, walked down from, let's say, Philadelphia to Fredericksburg.
Yeah.
No roads, no shoes, a handful of water, a handful of food to sustain them for the entire walk. We never hear about those individuals who didn't make that aspect of the journey. Mm-hmm. And when you got there, you had to sleep standing up, chained, leaning on individuals who there were no toilets, no outhouses, no restrooms. So there was literally 3 feet of feces and vomit and other bodily secretions on the floor that you had to sit in or stand in for the next 1 month to 3 months, depending on when the slave ships took you away from there. And this is a part of a story that we never hear.
No.
Ever hear.
No.
And this was the Amazon hub. This was the Walmart distribution center of the enslaved Africans. And it's these stories, along with once you get to the Middle Passage and then arriving to America and the shores, I mean, the amount of survival that took place.
Yeah, I mean, none of those are what's going to get better with any of that.
And as an enslaved African, they had no clue what they were going to. Many of them had never been to the sea before, so they feared the sea because they thought it was going to eat them up. You know, most of these people were inland, bush people, so they never dealt with the ocean.
Yeah.
And then seeing the involvement of the Africans, this was not just a one-time shot. This is an industry. This is a third, fourth, fifth generation slave traders or slave kidnappers who were coming in and kidnapping people, learning how to kidnap people from their parents and from their grandparents, and providing food for those individuals that's coming down. So it was a lot of understanding and a lot of desire to be able to tell this story again and tell the other side of this story, how we've triumphed and overcome this insurmountable odds to still contribute amount of greatness that makes this country great, that makes this country what it is, that our contributions really helped to sustain the pioneers, colonials that were here who were dying off in the 1610, 1612s, when there were, you know, less than 50 individuals who, you know, they were suffering.
Yeah.
And the enslaved Africans' contribution sustained the Union, created a Union, created a colony that would sustain them, and they don't come to this place called America today. And in this part, in 2017, the President Donald Trump passed H.R. 1242, which commemorated the 400-year commemoration of the first Africans in the United States or in this part of America.
Again, these are stories, Michael, that a lot of us have never heard.
Exactly.
Or at least not in, especially the detail that you just provided. That's we don't hear about that.
You don't hear about it because it's history and not our story. So yeah. History paints a certain picture about perspective that you want the people to know and understand. But this is a major aspect of the perspective. And it's knowing how much Fredericksburg and his area played in this particular this transatlantic slave trade was incredible. Where you had, I passed by Fort Anamabo in Anamabo, Ghana, in which we have records of slave ships arriving in the Rappahannock in Fredericksburg. So there's a direct connection between Ghana and Fredericksburg.
Yeah.
And within Ghana as well, you have Fort Fredericksburg, or Gross Fredericksburg, which is a German colony in which slaves, over 300,000 enslaved Africans, passed through that fort.
And that's in our sister city, Princestown. Fredericksburg was the first Virginia city to have a sister city in the continent of Africa. So that's another connection that a lot of people in our community don't know about, that we're trying to bring out those stories as well, is that Fredericksburg's connections to Africa in history and also today as well.
So how were people chosen in Ghana to make the trip? Were certain people selected to come over here?
It's very much believed that the best, I won't say Ghana per se, but in all of West Africa. Because at the time, Ghana is a part of the persuasion of, I guess, after 1898 and the Berlin Conference. The naming of that area became Ghana. Well, actually, not even that. It was Gold Coast. And then became Ghana in 1957. But during that time, when enslaved Africans were being kidnapped, they were chosen generally by their skills. So most individuals that were brought between the ages of 13 and 40, the prime of their physical strength.
Yeah.
And most of them were farmers, engineers, carpenters, builders, masons, and infertile mothers. And these were the individuals that were chosen. Senior citizens weren't chosen, and children were chosen or taken because they knew they would come, they came with their mothers, or maybe they were pregnant. And that was almost a two-for-one deal. So they were very much hand-selected. So many times the enslavers would come, land on the shores of West Africa. They didn't go inland. They told the traders or the kidnappers what they were looking for in terms of stock, and then he went on in country and selected those individuals, usually raided towns or talked to local kings and chiefs and leadership who've had wars with individuals, and they have people who've captured, and they sent those individuals down. So it was a very detailed and very, very selected in terms of who they chose. It was not happenstance at all. It wasn't just get, 20 people and come on. No, it was get the best farmers, the strongest men. When you go to Ghana in West Africa, you'll see a lot of short people. Because a lot of the tall individuals were taken because they were seen to be more fit.
Isn't that interesting?
Very. I was the tallest.
Wow. Yeah. Well, and again, these are stories. You just think of the horrific conditions. And we focus here a lot on just what slavery was like here and in the horrible conditions. Mm-hmm. But as you describe it, just the selection and getting here was just it's just unimaginable.
It's truly unimaginable. I mean, if you look at the young ladies that were selected, they went to a place called Asinmasu, and in Ghana, I guess next week they'll be celebrating Emancipation Day, where African Americans come down to kind of commemorate those individuals who came from there. And in Asinmasu, it's called the Last Bath. And Asinmasu is about 30 kilometers, 40 kilometers from Cape Coast. So the young ladies and young men got a last bath in Asinmasu in a river and then walked for 30, 40 miles. And that was your last bath until you got on the slave ship. And then once you're on the slave ship, you didn't get another bath until you got on the other side. However, the only way you could get a bath as a young lady was to be raped. They cleaned you up before they raped you. Mm. And that's the story of our sisters. And that's the story of, again, that perseverance that we had to go through and endure.
I can't imagine anybody even being able to survive anybody. But that just shows the strength of the people.
Absolutely. And we want to highlight those things. But we also want to highlight the greater contributions you made outside of the enslavement period. because we've made some great contributions within the city. We have some great artists here, great musicians, definitely great leaders across the board, business people, et cetera, who may not know all of that history and story, but they've endured it. Their genetics have endured it. They've suffered through it, and still, despite all of that, they still rose. They still strive to be the best they could be, to honor their ancestors. Because many of us talk about the American dream, but we ought to forget that we probably had an African dream before we came here.
Yeah. Much more. We're going to talk much more about this. Teresa, before we take a break, the Hannah Sem program, it's like you said, it's a year-long thing. It's a statewide initiative, but also being done here. And I know there are there are programs coming up that the people can get involved with.
Mm-hmm. There is a variety of programs. We are starting our programming back up. We had a little bit of a break. So we are now starting back up in September. We're going to have an evening with an expert lecture with Deborah Tulani Saluddin. She is a museum specialist at the National Museum of African American History and Culture. She'll be speaking at the Renwick Building in downtown Fredericksburg on September 19th. And that's one of our first programs of the fall, and she'll be talking about narratives of enslaved people and how they are being preserved at the museum, the National Museum of African American History and Culture. So that's going to be a great programming, and it's a year-long, it's a lecture series we do every year at the museum, but this year we are focusing on the Hannah Sem story. So
Town Talk, financed by Deakin Wealth Management, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Fredericksburg Area Museum, and especially our focus this morning, the Hannah Sem series, is what we're talking about with Michael Carter, Teresa Kramer, and Mayor Mary Catherine Greenlaw. More coming up on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's 8:30.
I had the radio on. I'm listening to
Talk Done Right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. Opinions. We've all got them, and we'd like to hear yours on Town Talk. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Michael Carter, Teresa Kramer, Mayor Mary Catherine Greenlaw here this morning. Fredericksburg Area Museum is our focus. And I didn't write it down. I meant to ask you during the break. What's the website for the Fredericksburg Area Museum? Is it famva.org?
Yes, it is famva.org. Okay. So,
and that will give you on what we're talking about here, and just really all the good stuff that's going on at the Fredericksburg Area Museum. Famva.org will give you information on that. Michael Carter, the last segment we did where you talked to me, that's one of the most compelling moments on this show, I think, that we've ever had. Mm-hmm. As you kind of described things, mm-hmm. and as you talk, the thing that just really comes out at you is just how families were just, mm-hmm. and slavery did this at all levels, but mm-hmm. even as you discussed, wow, I mean, talk about just ripping families apart forever.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, when you talk about slavery, many people say that in Africa they did have slavery. And it had a form of, you know, for lack of a better term, slavery, but it's more so extended family. Individuals would come and be like indentured servants.
Right.
Families weren't torn apart. Individuals weren't kidnapped. You became part of the family. You married into the family. There was no discrimination. There was no racism. There were individuals who were, quote unquote, slaves by the African definition, who became chiefs of the various community, who became, you know, noble people. Leaders. The context in the Western Hemisphere became totally of not seeing people as people. Humanity had lost its humanity during this time period. The Dark Ages had really made people very dark and made us see skin color over the humanity of individuals. And this has bled into American society today, where we're seeing, you know, the various things going on with the border and individuals being separated from their families. And it's been the history of America since 1619. I know personally of many families who've been torn apart and separated. And it's kind of almost standard. You know, when I first came back from Ghana, I came to the auction block discussions. I had no idea the auction block even existed. I lived in Caroline County for 18 years. I mean, James Palmer Scarlett and the like. Yeah. I had no idea this place ever existed.
Isn't that interesting?
it was very interesting and fascinating. And, you know, I'm a strong proponent that it stays there because there were so many things, so many families were torn apart from that place. But yet families were also brought together from that same place. And it's that story and that dynamic that we have to consider both ways. That as much as some families were torn apart, other families were brought together and created from this legacy. And that's, you know, the American story and this dynamic is so intricate. Because we were the only individuals in this country who had experienced this type of reality, where we were literally property, very much like cows and horses, dogs and cats. And we were property for 250 plus years, where you could literally get more empathy from killing a dog than killing a person.
Yeah.
And this is the plight of the African-American experience, and why I guess discussions like reparations and other things are coming up. Because this has had a gross effect upon our psyche, our development, our psychological development, our financial development, et cetera. How do you ever get started with something? How do you ever build a financial wealth of anything when everything is taken from you at a whim? Where you had free black free black men and women who owned land or tried to own land in Fredericksburg, but could be taken away at a moment's notice. You had great individuals throughout the region who had to flee this region because the Klan was coming. I have family members who never came back to Orange County because, hey, the Klan was coming for you, and you had to escape out of town that night. And if you came back, you felt that you were going to be killed. And this was a compelling story that African Americans throughout the region have experienced. And we generally don't tell these stories because who will listen? Who really can empathize with us? But we've lost land. We've lost families. We've lost our legacy and really our story. We've been so disconnected from Africa that at this point, you know, many of us don't even feel like we're African Americans. We're Negroes. We're blacks. We're just Americans. And this disconnect is not, you know, I don't blame the individual who feels that way. It's just the education. Mm-hmm. How do you feel like you're African if you never hear about Africa? How do you feel like you're part of an African if you have no idea what that culture is like, what that language is like? And many times we speak some of the words of that language and don't even realize it. We say something like ain't. Now, ain't in English from the black vernacular is no. Ain't from the tree is yes. You know, we carry those things in our souls. We don't even realize that we're saying it, but it's things that those individuals came here initially, carried with us and kind of just spread through us. But it was illegal for us to speak our language. So we had to encode it in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily, and we couldn't even tell our children this was part of our language. We just gave it to them piecemeal to keep a little legacy, a little bit of a little seed that one day would sprout up once we were able to now, again, explore our language and our history again.
Wow, that's all I can say. And you think about it, and I didn't even put together as you talk about just the inhumane conditions of getting over here and what life was like, but then you talk about the 50s and 60s with the Klan in all and
the 80s.
You
know, we try to look back like it's gone back. I still feel white nationalist groups today. I would not travel to certain parts of Virginia because I know that I'm not welcome. And I mean, we saw it in Charlottesville 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's not like it's gone away. It's just that it's been, for lack of a better term, whitewashed. We don't see it as much, or it's not as prone or obvious, but it's still there. Those sentiments are still there. And it's a sentiment that is rooted strictly in ignorance, because most African Americans have done nothing but try to live a productive and useful life in this region, add to the community. It's very rarely that you find anybody trying to bother anyone else, you know, in terms of causing terrorism, causing harm to individuals. But yet we still find ourselves in a situation where individuals still have a great disdain for our existence, our being. Mm. For what purpose? I still have no idea.
Yeah.
But again, it's part of a process in which we continue to tell our story. And hopefully in telling our story, we can soften hearts. We can plant seeds that these people aren't bad. They've been the victims of the greatest crime in the history of humanity to build the greatest nation in the history of humanity. You know, and all they want is leave us alone and let us live in peace. So that's all we want.
And that's where, Michael, this whole Hannah Sam and mm-hmm. the our story aspect of this series is something that we all need to look at seriously and not just say, that's for somebody else to go to.
It's something that we have to all look at coming to, but then also expanding, because we all have a story that we need to share. Because I use the example of George Washington all the time, and we're in George Washington's town. Mary Washington College is, I didn't realize Mary Washington College was Mary Washington's
name for his mother.
Like, you know, and George Washington had a story. And his story is deemed to be one of the greatest Americans ever. And we tell the story of him being this great man and having his wooden teeth. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you never hear the backstory of that reality. In which he didn't have wooden teeth at all. The same man who said, I can never tell a lie. Somebody told a lie about his wooden teeth. Because they say after they discovered that his teeth were actually made of real teeth. These real teeth were taken from his enslaved Africans out of the mouth of grown men and women with no sedation of any sort to make a bridge of dentures for a man whose teeth had fallen out. Now, you talked about, you know, this would not be painful, you know, like a dentist's office, but for our enslaved that, just being there, can you imagine no Novocaine and having your teeth yanked out of your skull numerous times?
Yeah.
You know, so these are the experiences that we had to tell of our story. Our story created dentures for the first president to be able to chew food so he could live. That's the amount of involvement that we've had in our story and the legacy of America. And we got to continue to tell other stories of how we've, again, been able to overcome all these adversities of having your teeth yanked out of your mouth as a grown person. Wasn't bad teeth. These were great molars and bicuspids and all those things that were in there that were solid. And the reason why your teeth were picked, because they were good.
Yeah.
They were healthy. They were strong. And you were robbed of the dignity and even the ability to chew your food because of this man.
Can't imagine. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So another thing with Michael saying about our story and the fact that throughout this series, the museum's also collecting oral histories, where we want everyone to share their story. So we're collecting people's responses to questions, and we want to hear people's stories. We want to collect this so it's something that we can give to the city later on. So that's something that it's not just the past, but it's also the present, that everyone does have a story and how we are related to this nation. So we all have a past. There's so much stories coming out right now. So we want everyone to come and share them.
And as James Baldwin eloquently expressed, and I can't quote his exact words, history is not history. We live it. Yeah. It informs our attitudes, our opinions, our very decisions today. And this dovetails so well with the exercise, if you will, that we did with the International Coalition of Sites of Conscience and the public meetings that we had and the conversations that we had, where people tell their stories. So it's not just old stories, it's new stories. Mm-hmm. It's what happened in 1920 and 1940 and 1952. We are learning so much about our city and how it grew, and the contributions that African Americans made to the city. And that is something that we are focusing on now to do a better job of telling. Mm-hmm. This Hannah Sam Al story gives us a year-long series of events to educate people, but this is something that's going to continue for some years to come, because we have actually set aside money and are creating a committee to look at how we tell our history and to do a much better job of telling what really happened in our city and how it grew and those who contributed to it.
And the city has graciously supported this series and is a sponsor of the city of the Hannah Sam series. So they have been a great component of the series, getting these wonderful speakers to come this fall, as well as American Evolution. That is the state of Virginia's commemoration for the year 1619. And they're one of our sponsors for our November event, which is going to be amazing. On November 21st, Leah Penniman, a African-American agriculturalist and farmer and activist, will be coming to speak as part of our series. She is the author of the book Farming While Black. And Michael is actually is close with her, and he's an agriculturalist as well. So he can tell a little more about Leah's background and what we're going to be hearing at that speak.
And Leah Penniman, this is what I call my soil sister. Not my soul sister, but my soil sister.
Yeah.
She's a farmer upstate New York at Soul Fire Farm. And, you know, we have similar histories or stories. She spent some time in Ghana kind of searching for her roots and studying on individuals and creating a very successful farm in upstate New York that's become a teaching farm for a lot of youth, as well as a great farm, I mean, for, I guess, Albany and some of the other areas in New York State. She's a farmer activist, so she really puts farms issues at the forefront, again, telling that story. And we're hearing, I'm in the agriculture world, I'm hearing a lot about various stories within agriculture and black farmers especially, them losing land, experiencing discrimination with the government of various programs. And we like to tell that story. We also like to tell the contributions of the Africans and the African Americans to agriculture. You know, many of us never consider all the chocolate that you eat chocolate, right?
Yeah, too much.
Yeah. Likewise, you can see my body. But chocolate is one of those crops that comes from Africa, comes from Ghana and Ivory Coast mainly. They produce 65-75% of the world's cocoa. Chocolate.
Okay, didn't know that.
I know you didn't.
Learning a lot.
Because
today.
Our perspective is that the chocolate comes from Switzerland, because you get Swiss chocolate. It comes from Hershey.
Could say Hershey. Hershey,
Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
But you never consider Kumasi, Ghana. You never consider Abidjan, Ivory Coast, where those individuals have millions and millions of acres of cocoa, producing that cocoa regularly. And they've been the number one and number two producer for the last 100 years. Hmm. And vanilla is another thing agriculturally. That the process to create vanilla was created by a black man. In Madagascar is the main producer of vanilla. And vanilla is one of those unique things that I like to use because its history, its story has not been told correctly. Because when we think vanilla, the first thing we think of is white. There's nothing in vanilla that's white. If you see the vanilla bean, what color is it? Black.
Really?
You've seen a vanilla bean. It's a long black bean.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, we don't even consider that this is... Agriculturally, we've contributed so much. And again, the rice here, the sweet potatoes, the black-eyed peas. Mm-hmm. Black-eyed peas come from Ghana. And again, many of our enslaved ancestors, those who were kidnapped, the young ladies, before they were kidnapped or before they were taken, they would have seeds and braid it in their hairs, not knowing where they would go, but they wanted to make sure that they would be able to have something wherever they went, they would be able to plant those seeds and have food for them. The vision of those ancestors to make sure that they had something. So we saw sorghum, we saw millet, we saw what cowpea, what you call black-eyed pea. And even the tradition of eating black-eyed peas on January 1st, mm-hmm. It was an African-American tradition, a watch night service, because the watch night, it became part of the watch night service when the first, or some of the last enslaved Africans were being freed. They would only be free, I think, January 1st, 1866, I believe it was, and they will watch the clock on December 31st, 1865.
Yeah.
Waiting for that time to hit so they knew they would be free.
Wow.
And this became a spiritual tradition that churches now do every night, watch night service. Again, our contributions have been so great to our everyday life. So Leah Penniman will share more on that, as well as Dr. Pamela Worcester on October 17th. A vessel. These individuals here are going to give you a lot more information than what I can provide.
You've been a pretty good vessel. Yeah. It's been great to have you talking about this. Michael Carter here, Mayor Mary Catherine Greenlaw, and Teresa Kramer here. The Fredericksburg Area Museum and the Hen Sem series, the Our Story series, is our focus this morning. FAMVA.org if you want to follow what's going on. And also the Fredericksburg Area Museum has a great Facebook page that we'll keep you up to date. We'll wrap it up in just a second. Town Talk financed by Deakin Wealth Management, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. We'll be right back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Got a question for today's guest? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Teresa Kramer, Michael Carter, Mayor Mary Catherine Greenlaw from the City, and this morning, the Fredericksburg Area Museum is our focus. Hannah Salmon, our story, the program at the museum. Boy, Teresa, as we've heard Michael and the mayor talk about this morning, you just think, you know, this program has, you know, a name that you don't, it's kind of like, what? But I mean, this is something that is really worth looking into and not just treating as just any other program. This is really impactful.
It is. It's something that it's a story that we all need to hear as a community. And we're hoping that the HennaSem series is not just something that we're doing for a year, but we hope to continue African-American stories and African-American focuses at the museum. So this is not something that's going to end with the commemoration. We want to tell stories of our community and how this story has affected us. So we're hoping that everyone comes to our programming, though, because it's something that you're going to learn something every time you come. It's not something... Yeah. And it's a programming for a little bit of everyone. We have programming for children as well. We have a second Saturday program on October 12th talking about our African sister city in Princestown, Ghana. So we are also it's not just for adults, but we want families to come as well and to learn more about our story. So it's a series for everyone and multiple interests.
Stay up to date with it. FAMVA.org, again, is the website. Boy, Mayor Greenlaw, these kind of conversations, there's a lot of them going on, and will always go on in this community just because of where we live and what has happened. But what Michael's talked about this morning is some really heavy stuff.
Indeed it is. And I'm so proud of our community that we sit down and talk to each other and listen to each other.
Yeah.
But the stories that are coming out are amazing. The stories, you know, contemporary stories, mm-hmm. you know, 20th century stories are amazing and need to be told. And the museum is capturing oral histories. We have captured in our discussions information. So we're collecting all this. And hopefully we'll make very good use of it in the years going forward so that these stories are not lost.
Wow, Michael!
And so that the real history's not lost.
This has been an impactful morning, and again, got to have you back to talk much more about this, because this is really good stuff, and this program is really something to pay attention to and participate in.
Absolutely. I mean, when you look at it, our story contributes to everyone's story.
Yeah.
And creates history. Without our story, there is no America. There is no Virginia. There is no Fredericksburg. So, you know, we want to make sure we acknowledge those stories, both past and present, to the contemporary, because we continue to tell our stories every day, of every moment of our lives.
Michael Carter, Teresa Kramer, Mary Catherine Greenlaw, thank you all so much for being here. And again, the Fredericksburg Area Museum, the HennaSem series going on all year long and longer. FAMVA.org is the website.
Thanks
thank you
for
all.
Listening to
thank you.
Talk on
thank
News
you.
Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.